Welcome to Talking in Stations, a podcast about Yvonne Lied. Yvonne Line, not Yvonne Lied. And that is recorded live. I am your host, Madro. I would like to introduce some guests in just a second, but today we're going to be talking about a variety of things like we did last week. Apothne gracefully stepped in at the last second on Mother's Day. Thanks for that again.
No worries.
It's not actually Mother's Day in the UK, just as an FYI.
That's why he could do it, I suppose. It was for the US, and so I had to take off. But thanks again for doing that. And this week is going to be largely the same type of show where we have a variety of things happening because a variety of things are happening out there in EVE Online. So we'll be talking about the breaking news that Sword Dragon's avatar was killed up in the north. And we'll talk about that a little bit with the guy who planned the attack or plotted the attack. And he is Kunmi from Goonswarm, I believe.
Hello.
And we will go back to Providence and Pandemic Legion, moving to Asai, which is in low security space, is it? Yeah. And we will talk about that with Jintan.
Hello. Yeah, I'm been mostly disconnected from the actual direct proceedings, but I've been keeping an eye on it as best as I can.
Great. And probably Killa B, who's with us as well, will weigh in on that as well. How are you doing, Killa B?
Hey, I'm doing good. I'm eating a banana.
Okay. We'll make sure to give you enough time.
He explains why he doesn't want it on camera. That'd be a gift.
We're also going to talk about something that broke yesterday on the Meta Show, and that is that the DRF looks to be collapsing and moving into Legacy Coalition. So we'll go over there and see what's going on. And lastly, we'll talk about the Alliance Tournament and some of the new rules that CCP have put out for this year's tournament. You excited about that, Apothne?
What? Am I allowed to swear on this show? Okay, can I get a quick yes or no?
Just once, yes.
What the fuck do you think, dude?
All right, we can bleep that out. Okay, so first let's find out who Kunmi is, and then we'll get on with what happened with Sword Dragon's avatar. And the reason that is important is, of course, Sword Dragon is the leader of Guardians of the Galaxy, so it could be a big morale hit. But also, Sword Dragon's Titan going down is a big deal in EVE Online, because the last time it went down, it was in the Battle of VTAC R, where he was the focus of intense focused fire and survived long enough to really turn the battle in BTAC R. At least that's one characteristic of what happened in BTAC R. We'll talk about that as well. But first, how are you, Kunmi?
Good. How are you doing? It's a little good. Early for me.
Yeah, thanks for showing up. So are you from Goonswarm itself?
Yeah, I've been in Goonswarm since 2006.
And what? Tell us a little bit about yourself, your story.
Well, I'm usually kind of quietly in the background. Yeah. This has been the biggest part I've played in a deployment that we've ever done, or the most involved I've been. I don't know. I usually kind of sit in the background, do ancillary stuff, a lot of Black Ops FCing, hunting, special tasks, spec ops kind of stuff.
You talk a little bit more. I'm always interested when people say ancillary stuff. Like, that normally to me means that you kind of support other people, or you do lots of very small things. Can you go into that at all, or is it all spooky secret Black Ops stuff that we can't know about?
No, I mean, you know, spreading out hunter alts, finding targets, Sino's in the right place at the right time, Dictor is in the right place at the right time.
Oh, you're the best person. I like you. You're a content facilitator.
I know it takes a load off the FCs, is generally the idea.
Yeah, I asked Asher if he wanted to be on. I also asked Sword Dragon, by the way, but Sword Dragon was unavailable.
Wonder why?
Well, no, he wasn't afraid of the topic. I think he was actually going to bed because he's late. It's late hey, night yeah. for him when this goes on. But anyway, Asher says, I'll get the guy that plotted the kill. He's a great talker.
Oh, yeah. He knows exactly.
Yeah. So I know he's messing with me because you seem like a quiet guy. Tell us what happened here and how Sword Dragon got trapped.
I mean, the weird thing is there isn't much to say. Like, it was I'd like to say there was this grand plan, but really it was, we knew where they were going. We knew they'd have supers. We knew they'd have pretty light support because that's a pretty bad time for them, kind of late night US time zone, but not quite late enough for AUTZ is probably the worst numbers possible for them. It's where we've done a lot of damage, actually. Yeah, we knew where they were going. We knew they had to take that gate. We expected a couple super carriers. We didn't expect the Erebus at all.
There was an Erebus that died first.
Yeah, so the main group that went in was, I believe there was two super carriers. Erebus showed up at the last minute and a bunch of regular caps. They kind of regrouped in Decuck, which is the last system in Declan before you hit the regional gate to Venal.
That's actually D-K-U-K,
D-K-U-K, yeah.
Yeah.
That's kind of an interesting system because it's also out of range of their former staging system. So it's right smack in the middle, worst possible spot for them. The route they take is they jump to CCP, they jump to DKUK, they warp the gate, they jump, and then they're in their staging system with the Keepstar. So they jumped in. We had Dictors logged off on the DKUK gate. We saw them go through, we logged in, we bubbled up. Erebus showed up, so we dropped res on that. That actually went pretty quick. The bus dropped pretty fast. It didn't have a Feno generator, so that didn't help. They had very little fax support. I think they might have had two or three initially. But the crucial part of all this was they just spent the entire week moving their cap fleet into WF. So all of the fax support was either in WF, which was in system on grid, actually, or in DO6, which was way out of jump range. So the bus dropped with no drama, the Aeon dropped with no drama, and then things got kind of weird. So I was the initial Sino on the Dictor, but we also had Boat there and a Saber. Boat did Boat things, jumped through the gate and got eyes on the other side. And as he was doing that, two avatars jump in or log in. That's actually not clear to me. One was someone strange. I think he's from Slice, if I remember right. And the other was Sword Dragon. So they both warped the gate. Someone strange jumped in, fired off a BFG at some of our dreads. And Sword Dragon just kind of sat there. So we mopped up some caps, went see dread, de-aggressed, reapproached the gate, and just jumped everything in. By that point, Sword had started moving, but he was still about 10 kilometers off. And we just plowed the Istar fleet into him, bumped him off, and sieged again. So the other side of the gate, all their faxes had attempted to warp into the fight grid. And I think they were just focused. Probably Sword Dragon himself was focused on killing our dreads on the WF side. So they'd all been, you know, engaged, shooting, firing Doomsdays off, which had them stuck there for 5 minutes. They were bubbled 130 kilometers off the gate, so they couldn't warp the gate or anything. All of his support was either in DO6, which was out of range, or gating to CCP, but there wasn't a lot of it. So we just kind of sat there and killed him. There was nothing he could do about it.
He didn't say so, but it seemed to indicate that he kind of logged in and ended up there. I don't know if it's...
Like, the only thing I can think of is he was logged off there, which makes sense. He logged in, he warped to the gate, just forgot about it. Everyone was focused on the WF side, on kind of just murder zoning our dreadnoughts, that he just forgot. That's the only thing I can think that can happen.
Yeah. Now, you normally dual box or triple box or multi-box?
15 box, 17 box, yeah.
Yeah. I was guessing low. 15 different accounts at the same time?
Yeah, usually it's a mix of stuff. So last night I had two Dictors, a couple Sino Welts, and six Dreads. Typically I've got like my seven core alts that will do PvP-ish type stuff. So in this, Dreads are pretty easy to multi-box, actually.
Yeah, they're slower and you can have more time while they're doing stuff. But when you're doing multiple tackling ships, that must be... You must lose a lot of ships just because you can't attend to them.
Oh, yeah, all the time. I've lost thousands and thousands of bombers, basically, and that kind of stuff is just disposable.
Yeah, I mean, but you're kind of like an octopus, right? You're playing with 15 different possibilities inside of a certain area.
Yeah, it's pretty big for Black Ops kind of stuff because you have to be in a lot of places at the same time. We've got a couple people, actually. Zungen has even more than I do. He runs something like 30. And together, we've just been able to camp most of kind of Declan, Peerbind, and more recently, Branch.
Yeah, that's wild. It's amazing gameplay. I should do something on that specifically and just talk about how that's even possible, how people do that well.
It's mostly patience.
Yeah, I bet. So this is, what's the backdrop of what's going on here? Is the GOTG, and any of you guys can talk, Killer B or Gentan, is GOTG going up to Teenal to like change the front from the, what, Pure Blind to Teenal Venal area?
I mean, well, we moved actually first. That's what prompted this whole move. We've been deployed in Pure Blind since October. At varying levels, or actually generally increasing levels since then. The past month or so, actually ever since the station change has been announced kind of officially, the outpost to Citadel changeover, they suddenly became a lot more sensitive about our presence and activities in Pureblind. We started putting more like Fozzy-Sov pressure and stuff like that as well. So that prompted a lot of moving of their allies into Pureblind. So at one point, I think we had, what, CO2, NC, PL were both present. MC was showing up. Horde shows up occasionally. I don't even know who else. Fail, FXR. Like, maybe a dozen alliances, probably. Not all at once, but at different times. But the point was, we were all deployed in Pureblind as well. So we decided that we would send one of our SIGs up north, or a bit further north, into Venal, which gives us striking range into Branch, which is where all of Sword Dragon's renters live. So that region's basically, my understanding is mostly rented out either to corporations that exist within GOTG or to full-out renter alliances, which would be, what's it called, Herbie Dragons?
Mm-hmm.
So we thought we'd put some pressure there, and their response was to move just absolutely everything to WF to counter us, which is kind of questionable to me, but that's a whole other topic.
I think they're very interesting that this has followed kind of like a slow motion version of what happened in the past time Goonswarm deployed to the north. If you remember the 2-week war, it never really got named because it was so short, so I've taken to calling it that. In that war... The one where Goonswarm deployed a lot of their dreads up, there was one very large one in Nalvula, which Killer B was obviously very involved in. He baited it out. And then that led to Goonswarm deciding to go back to Delve and focus on that for a little longer. And now they're coming back up again, but it's been a lot slower. There's been a lot more nuance and pace to it. There hasn't been quite as much hype. And because of that, we didn't see... you know, the United North, the UN, really form until Goonswarm already had their first foothold, thanks to their six. So I think it's an interesting way to see that, or an interesting point of comparison between the two little wars, where this one's built up a lot more naturally and was less, you know, the attempt at being a hammer stroke, whereas this is a bit more calculated, a bit more nuanced. Do you guys have any thoughts on that? That's just my perspective as an outsider. I'm sure I might be misinterpreting things.
I mean, yeah, you're right, actually. And this deployment, if you look at when it happened, it's actually very interesting because we deployed up in Hakonan probably July, early August or something like that. And we brought a shitload of dreads with us. And one of the things that actually kickstarted this deployment was our dread insurance running out in Hakonan. So we had a buttload of Naglfars running out of insurance. We're like, okay, what do we do with it? Let's go Nink in GOTG space and deploy out Aurora. So yeah, the first 30 or so dreads we brought up there, we were just going to drop on Oracles and freighters and ratting carriers until we lost all our insured dreads. And that was kind of mid-October.
Yeah, and, it's worth saying that you guys don't seem to be going for any sov, really. This isn't an invasion. It's more of a, we're going to sit near you and do terrible things to you, so you can't make as much money as us.
We've been popping iHubs as we can. It hasn't been a super high priority. Generally, we've just been applying pressure in every area that's possible. They're heavily time zone tanked everything, so absolutely everything they have is into AUTZ, which is, to be fair, probably their strongest and probably our weakest. So we can't really make meaningful progress, really, with our numbers and fixed point engagements, things they can prepare for, is a lot more difficult for us because they can round up numbers a lot easier. So the strategy is just basically apply pressure everywhere, absolutely all the time, for months on end, and then
exploit
mistakes.
Probably worth noting you're focusing on iHubs for the same reason you focused on them during the Providence campaign, because they're worth the most money of any of the solve structures due to the upgrades installed in them.
Yeah, but it also screws up the ADM, so it leaves open more actions after the fact. So once the iHubs are dead, you can go troll Mentosis, the station's a lot easier. Removes all the upgrades, so it makes the space basically worthless as well. Snaps jump bridges, beacons.
I'm sure if you do that to some renters, they're probably not appreciate it either.
Yep, that's where we were focusing it.
Well, we've heard a lot about like Goon's victories, but Killer B, is there anything the North has done well here? You know, what's the North doing to fight back? Because I know you guys aren't going to lie down and take aggression from Goons without doing anything about it. That's not your style.
Oh, no, I haven't played the game in 4 weeks, so...
Final exams too?
No, not really, but I just have other stuff to do at the moment. I don't know. If I thought it was very interesting, I would get involved. Right now, this whole thing doesn't seem like it's something I would want to get involved in too much, to be honest. It's just a content deployment for the people in Goons that don't like to sit around and delve 24/7 and make money, right? So, you know.
Yeah, but it does look like stakes are actually being formed. I mean, you're starting to, well, is it though? I mean, is GOTG in trouble here?
That depends on how strong they are internally,
I guess.
But that's nothing that we can have any influence on. I cannot increase the internal morale or the internal strength of GOTG. I think we've all learned that you can't really kill an alliance or a coalition from just pure brute force. Usually, you can, but it's always easier than to cause some internal drama. And what Goons have been doing very effectively and very, they've been doing it really well, actually. They've basically been doing what PL did in the past, and they just did it with a bunch of six, and they're putting the pressure onto GOTG, and it's causing a lot of shit going on within GOTG, obviously, as we can see with the Kenshin or whatever they're called, who keep having directors transfer shit over to Goons and all that kind of stuff. So, that's the way to do it, to be honest. That's how you break people. I don't know. Like, I can't speak on the internal strength of GOTG. I don't know what's going on within GOTG. But as far as I'm concerned, if it were very serious, then probably somebody would have told, so far we've been told they can handle it, so we haven't really been involved too much. We show up for the occasional time or we have our supers deployed to OTEC-Y, which is on the border to Pure Blind, which allowed us to respond with supers a bit quicker when there was a dread bomb going on. And then sometimes we wormhole up with a subcap fleet as well, because we're currently deployed in Gehi, which is low sec close to Quarius, of course. So yeah, that's kind of what we do. And I don't know. To me, it's all kind of just, I'm watching it. You know, I haven't actually played the game, but we all know, Gigax is basically running an alliance without being able to log into the game at the moment, right? So I'm staying in the loop. I'm reading the Discord channels and I'm talking to people, but it's just not enough at the moment to get me playing. I'm not very motivated to play at the moment.
This is since FanFest, probably?
Oh, yeah. When I got back from FanFest, So I basically disappeared after FanFest because right before FanFest, I got a call or a message from the place I was working at. I was just working there very casually, but they basically offered me to work there more seriously and to do a long-term you know, basically build up a long-term relationship with the company I worked at. So
nice.
I basically took that, and that's why I've been just working mostly in real life at the moment. And the spare time that I have, I still have, you know, spare time, obviously, but the spare time that I have, I just chose not to spend on EVE. I do other stuff at the moment.
Well, that's good. I'm glad things are going well in real life, and that's coming first, as they say, real life first, but you're actually doing it. But this, but you know, this is like, it may have started out as like, these guys are bored.
I just want to, one sec. I wanted to reply to a dude called Service Charge in Twitch chat. Uh-oh. Our supers are not an X47, my friend. We have a Keepstar X47, but our supers are still an Altec Y. But thank you. Clearly, you know better than I.
But there is a Keepstar there, right? So that's new.
We dropped that Keepstar X47 as a response to like, Kun Mi said, that we were planning on deploying supers into the X47 Keepstar, but then with the redeployment of the Reavers into Venal, we basically chose not to, so we could still somewhat respond within Tribute, because this, the position they deploy to in Venal actually gives them it's a very nice spot to be able to hit T-Null, Branch, and also Tribute if they want to via the QCAP gate, so they can. They can do a lot of shit in all, basically all our Enter space. And Altec Y is a better position for us to be in.
Yeah, and that's the home of NC Super Capital Fleet, which is part of the Super Capital umbrella over the area. But what I wanted to get to is there are things at stake. I mean, even though this is just kind of keeping people busy, you know, keeping pilots from logging off because they want a PvP, so you give them something to do. It's what PL does. It's what NC does. It's what Goonswarm does. But this has real stakes to it because GOTG seems to be, at least from reading about EVE, seems to be in a bit of trouble with not being able to keep their guys happy, because you can see there's a lot of defections from the coalition. And so this latest is a morale hit because Sword Dragon is their leader, and when his Titan goes down, it's noticeable. Unlike a lot of Titans, there was a time when Titans going down was news. It would have a full article on how it happened. But this was about 10 years ago. Things have changed a bit.
Yeah, I like what Kunmi said, you know. He was pretty right. Kunmi said, he said, I wish there was this great plan or whatever, but it was kind of just the way it happened. You know, it kind of, that's how it usually goes with EVE. There's not always a big scheme or big plan. People always think there is, but generally you plan to do something. Like Kunmi said, they were planning to drop on a smaller move up, probably hoping to kill a bunch of carriers, maybe a couple supers, and then it kind of just escalated from there, and that's how things usually go down in EVE.
There's actually a great quote about that, which is, the best plans are laid after the action has already happened.
But Kunmi, I think you're a new podcast star because you have such a measured response to things, and you are a great talker. You have a ton of detail, so we're going to have to like bring you on more often.
I'll have to kill some more Titans first.
Yeah, well, I don't think you have a problem with
15 please do.
At the same time. Is there anything else that's interesting about this conflict? Where do you see it going, Kunmi?
It's hard to say. Like, we haven't had any, like, we very deliberately went in with no particular goals, so there wouldn't be any goalposts moving. I mean,
can't move the goalposts if you don't have any.
Yeah. I mean, it started as a Black Ops deployment, so worst case scenario, we can always fall back on that. And that's something we've kept up largely, even though we've moved on to hitting Citadel, stuff like that. It's hard to say where it's going. I mean, if you told me even what February that we'd be treadmilling in the scale that we are, winning fights the size that we are, I wouldn't have believed you. So who knows what the next 2 weeks will bring, let alone 2 months. I could see GOTG's lost a lot of members. We can see that on Dotland, and they're spread out thin. I can see a consolidation happening. I'm sure they'll see Pureblind after the station patch. I would be surprised if they didn't immediately. So that'll be a change, but all that'll do really is condense them into Declan, which isn't a good position for them to be in either.
Why not?
Easier to hunt.
And what'll happen to Pureblind?
who knows? I think French Connection has interest. Banderlogs has interest. They've been scooping up, actually, we've been breaking iHubs and stations and stuff, and then Banderlogs has been sweeping in and taking them. Fail as well, or Cascade Imminent, I think they're called. Every time we drop an iHub near their space, they drop their own. I don't really know what's going on there, and I don't really care as long as we're breaking stuff. So I think Pureblind will just shift over to some people that still have loose affiliation with GOTG, but won't be under their direct control anymore. That's just a prediction.
Do you guys, what's the wider plan with the North if these things are breaking? Are you installing people, or are you letting the vacuum get filled?
No interest.
Right, because you don't have the will to administer that.
I mean, and it's pushed as far as Cloud Ring, but I doubt they have any interest beyond their immediate border systems either.
So then it just gets filled with the vacuum. I mean, whoever can get in there and take it.
Yep, which is good for us. I mean, so the big thing that prompted this was, like, you brought up Hakkonen earlier. One of the things we saw and learned during the Hakkonen deployment was just the sheer numbers that GOTG was bringing to the table on the northern side. I mean, you guys did your super fleets, and then your Mercurial fleets, and then GOTG was coming down with another 250 Mercurials. I mean, it was just such massive numbers. And at the same time, they're also the weak flank, right? So that's one of the reasons we went that direction.
GOTG lost a lot of numbers when CO2 reformed, which is something that has caused them some problems, because a lot of the, when CO2 died, a lot of the corporations joined. I think we only got like one corp to join NC, or maybe two, I don't even know.
I have a spreadsheet.
But a lot of the corps actually joined GOTG, and that's what gave them a lot of numbers. I think the peak of GOTG's performance was when they had the fight over the MTO Keepstar or something, when GOTG, like just GOTG coalition formed like 1,200 people or something. That was ridiculous. And but then when CO2 reformed, a lot of people went back to CO2, and GOTG bled a lot of people. I was actually like, when the whole like CO2 reforming thing happened, I was kind of like giggling at it. I was like, yeah, as if that's really going to happen. And then CO2 actually exploded, and now they're forming 250 man fleets again, which is surprisingly to me. I didn't think it would play out that way, but yeah, basically, CO2 has grown very, very strong, very fast, and GOTG has basically supplied them with most dead strength, which is a little bit of a problem for them.
Well, the other thing that
past spreadsheet, it looks at like about 1,300 CO2 members joined up to GOTG in various alliances. So if all of those left, then, you know, that's a significant knock, and a significant knock of muscle, not just fat, because CO2 wasn't a ratting alliance, you know?
Yeah, the other thing that also happened that wasn't brought up was the Horde move. That was actually really interesting. So prior to March, we just had our US time zone SIG primarily, and it was kind of a situation where it was like a lot of weak alliances propping each other up, plus Horde. And having Horde there really tipped the balance. So two things changed when they left. One, obviously, the immediate problem for GOTG was all their a lot of their muscle left, right? So Horde was bringing what? I think they were running Tempest like all the time against our Ishtars and capital support. So that just disappeared basically overnight. And the other thing that happened was the vacuum and Pureblind and Fade. And the first thing GOTG did as soon as Horde left was sweep through and take all that space. Or most of it, actually. Primarily Fade, but a lot of Pureblind stuff as well. And we just kind of laughed because we knew they were going to be way overextended. And as they're adding dozens and dozens of systems and spreading out and decentralizing their defense fleets, they're also losing thousands of members to CO2. So they were already overextended, and then they started dropping numbers significantly. And it just kind of played into our hands.
But GOTG is still showing up to fight.
I mean, it's their space. Yeah, of course they are, right? It's their, it's what they control. But the you know, Kumi was right that the Horde leaving was actually really, really significant in terms of the strength of the region, because it just, yeah, it just overextended GOTG, made them really vulnerable. And Horde and Geminate is just, Horde feels somewhat out of place. I don't know why they moved there, really. I wasn't really involved in that. But yeah, it seems like, I'm not really sure. And like, you know, if you assume that the common interest between all these alliances of the North is to defend and maintain a stable North, then moving to Geminate just doesn't seem very logical, because Geminate, I wouldn't really count as North personally. And it puts them so much out of position that, you know, it's just kind of weird, but I tried not to get involved too much with that, because then I would have to deal with goblins, and it's a very fun thing to do.
Is that sarcastic?
Yes.
So I actually have a question for both Kunmi and Killer B here, just to quickly wrap this one out. I want to ask if either of you think the United North or Goons will have taken a station from one another by the time of the station changeover. Do you think that there's likely to be, you know, at least one straight station traded back and forth between the two? You know, the United North, including both GOTG and NC and PL and MC and all that.
No, I don't know. I can see them maybe just in tossing a station and taking one. But on the other hand, I think GOTG is really going to focus on not letting any stations slip away, especially in Pure Blind, because like Kunmi said, after the station change happened and all those stations are citadels, you can basically at that point Pure Blind's basically like you can just ignore it. It's kind of useless. So yeah, and I mean, I don't know if we're going to do anything in the south. I don't think we'll take any meaningful amount of stations and queries or whatever from with our Gehi deployment. So yeah, don't think the station change is as much of a big deal as people thought it would be as well, in my opinion.
No, a lot of the moves that were going to be made came way before anything was revealed. Really, like the taking of Providence, the taking of Fountain, all the big outlying, you know, minor members that just happened to have a lot of stations just casually got walked out of the arena long before we knew it was going to happen.
It was a nice incentive to start something, right? It is something. Yeah. You struggle with the thing with alliances and players and EVE is that if you deploy somewhere and you tell your members, hey, we're deploying here just to have some fun. That works in some alliances. I think Snuff is an alliance where that works. Probably some of the Goon Six are groups that work with. But there is alliances in the game that you can't really operate on, hey, we're just going here, just, you know, casually PvP, have some fun. Lots of the alliances, lots of the people need a narrative. They need a reason to be there. And, you know, going somewhere and saying, hey, we're going here to take those stations because it's totally going to be worth it with the station changes, is something that is very appealing to you as an alliance leader, because you can use that as a like narrative to deploy somewhere and go fuck some shit up, when in reality, you know, it probably won't matter as much. But that's just the struggle of the leadership, is to find, you know, actually keep your people motivated to play the game.
So Kunmi, I wanted to ask you one more question. Were you the guy that sold what were they? I just lost the word. What's their new doctrine that everybody was talking about? It's not...
Oh, eagles.
Thank you. Griffins wouldn't pop out of my head, but eagles, yeah. So that's a new doctrine.
And the shape you're good at, maybe?
No.
I'm sorry. Not that was harsh.
That's rude.
I'm not like all these real doctrines.
Yeah, so what's going on there with their eagles?
You're talking about the thing that was out yesterday?
Mm-hmm.
I think that probably overblew a little bit. I sell a lot of Tech 2 stuff. It's kind of my income stream that I can run while deployed or anytime, really. And back when GOTG was adopting them, like obviously I have orders up and I can see who's buying stuff. And I noticed someone went through and bought like 40 ships off me. And turns out it was Sword Dragon or one of his alts. And meanwhile, like we have spies in their alliances, and they were having a lot of complaints about the Eagle contracts that were 650, almost 700 million-esque. In parallel, I'm watching the GTA prices that I'm selling them at to GOTG alts that are kind of, you know, the 260 million range for the hull. So, but there, you know, there was also supply issues at the time. GTA got wiped out at one point for about 24 hours. So it was definitely a little bit overblown, but there's definitely some suspicious gouging, not necessarily from their leadership, but whatever's available there is pretty expensive. And I think that's been a consistent issue with them, not just with Eagles, but there are other doctrines as well. There's been a lot of that going on, which I guess can be expected when you kind of have a weaker, you know, logistics system. I don't know. I haven't spent a lot of time outside of GSF, so I don't know how other alliances do it, but that would be pretty bad if we had something like that.
A model that's fairly similar to how Providence used to do their logistics, which was basically just anarcho-capitalism, then it makes a lot of sense. Like, a lot of people will just say, people will get the ships here, they'll be, you know, sold, make sure it's at a reasonable price, and reasonable does include like a total 20-30% markup, which, you know, I think that could be within potentially.
So that wasn't anything that was done deliberately, because the Gehi market for NCDOT is also being blown out.
I mean, like, the prices of Tech 2 has risen extremely too since then. I mean, I don't think you can, I haven't checked recently, but I think hacks are all over 300 million ISK now. And if they aren't, they're going to be.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's something that, you know, the whole T2 issue is something that basically the way that the moon changes worked out, there is basically only two real groups in the game right now that are effectively mining the moons, which is Tests and Goons, because for example, NCDOT just doesn't have the members to moon mine effectively, because we don't like to run, you know, for example, we would probably have to run Alliance mining, moon mining ops and stuff like that, which is something NCDOT would not like very much. And there's not a whole lot of other big groups in the game that are effectively moon mining. So that obviously gives Goons the ability to manipulate or, you know, kind of control the T2 market, or at the very least produce T2 at build cost for themselves, because they have the minerals available to them. And then everybody else has to pay the ridiculous GDOT price for it. And that's, you know, puts Goons in a very strong position, where I can see in the longer term Goons to be, you know, one of the few alliances that can actually throw around T2 ships a lot, and everybody else is kind of restricted on that. Luckily for us, T1 ships are so strong at the moment, like Ferox's, for example, that as of right now, in my opinion, that's not too big of an issue, because you can still beat T2 comms with T1 comms. But if they balance ships in a way that T2 actually is a lot more dominant over T1 at some point, then that is definitely gonna give Goons even more of an advantage, or Tests as well. I should include them, because they're also effectively mining most of their moons and using those T2 products, compared to, you know, all the other power blocks, because PL is not doing it, we're not doing it, and that's about all the power blocks there are in the game. So
is this a change in lifestyle, though? Because they used to be living the dream, just going and being a mercenary kind of group. That would...
Yeah, you can't do that anymore. That's just, no. It used to be possible the way that passive moon mining worked. You could just hold some R64s all over Eve. It's what PL used to do, where they would basically, before Phoebe and all that, PL would basically control, you know, a whole shitload of R64s all over LowSec, all over places, and they would make their money with that. Now, basically, the only way for alliances like NCDOT and PL to make money is to have renters, because alternatively, we would have to change our lifestyle a lot, which I think a lot of the people in those alliances are not willing to do, because they're just, you know, used to not doing it. So
I think this just comes down to the play style that a lot of those players are used to. Like,
yeah, exactly.
A lot of people in NC and PL are here because they enjoy winning. You know, they enjoy being very, very good at what they do in PvP, and that's always been the focus of their game. So, you know, they kind of want to be able to take the 4 weeks off like you have if combat isn't feeling particularly exciting, and now you don't get to make 4 weeks worth of money because of that, just because of the way Eve's developed over the time.
That's a very interesting, I think the concept would work, like that concept would work really well for Eve if, because, you know, if CCP actually planned it to be that way, I think it would work out if Eve had a lot more players. But with the amount of players available to the game right now, there's just not enough players. It would be interesting if, you know, the North had the combined player numbers that that Goons have, or the Imperium has, and that Test has, Legacy. If we also had those, we would also be able to mine moons and stuff like that Or
you mean sustained numbers there, because we've seen that you've been able to bring the same level of peak numbers as the Imperium in the past.
Yeah, but that's just because we have more dedicated, like, that's just because our peak, like, so for example, NC Dot, right? We have about 800
quality over quantity. I get what you're trying to say.
Yeah, yeah. So it's just goons have a lot of people that are basically just Care Bears, and they log into PvP if they absolutely have to. They get there like one or two. I don't know what the.
Let's not throw stones here.
and the rest is just bears, right? And that's something, but that's good. Like, I don't want to shit talk the bears here, because it's effectively what's making them stronger than every other alliance in the game at the moment is the fact that they have those bears. They have the dedicated PvP people, which is basically the people you see deployed in the north right now, which are the six, are most of the really PvP driven people, basically the NC.NPL within goons, so to say. Is what those six are. And then you have the people that are only interested in, or mostly interested in, making money and crabbing all day, and that's fine. Goons accept that, and they use that, and it makes them incredibly strong, because they can utilize those minerals, they can utilize all that stuff, and that's something that gives them an edge over the north, because we effectively have no group, or, well, we did, it was GOTG, but now they're kind of struggling, I guess. So it is... You know, well, it is something that they have on us, basically.
Right there, there can be more than one reason for doing things, or one reason that, say, Imperium leadership would continue to fund heavy losses for these SIGs that are doing things, because there's more than one reason for that. One is the SIGs just want to have fun in PvP. Two is attacking the income-generating part of the North. So even if it wasn't for that reason... Would you admit that taking out GOTG, or at least disrupting their ability to do T2 mining and do the usual stuff, is affecting the long-term health of the powers of the North?
Yeah, of course it is. I mean, long-term, it is a very effective thing to do. I'm not saying it isn't. I'm just saying I don't think it was all schemed out like that. I mean, Aerith is probably going to say it's part of his 8-step plan to take over the universe, and that's fine.
Actually, one of the drivers was, I talked about the Hakonnen deployment and spare dreads and the numbers GOTG was bringing, but the other reason we went there was the MER reports, actually. I think they were like number three or something. They were on the point was they were on the upswing, and their mining numbers, their adding numbers were just constantly going up. And we could see that if we didn't deploy, that would just continue. And if we did deploy, that would be the best place to go.
Yeah, well, good call.
So it was planned out a little bit from that
premeditated
perspective.
Yeah. So what about that sale then from the culture who was abandoning Fountain? Was that just like a pot of gold handed to you guys?
I don't actually really remember what happened there. I think we bought a Keepstar, right?
Well, it was the Keepstar plus the entire region.
I mean, I guess that just kind of quietly happened.
Yeah,
when
I guess
did that happened, actually. I don't even remember.
I love this kind of topic. I wish we could go on with it, but we have some other news that we want to cover too, and that is the...
Perhaps we could do another podcast at some point, Philippi, where we go a little more in depth about what you said there with regards to there needing to be more players, in, because I think that's a very, very interesting point we're touching on. But we don't really have the time to go in super in depth right now.
Yeah, at some point. Right now, we need to switch gears over to, real quick, let's hit what's going on in the East, and that is that Drone Region Federation appears to be actually collapsing. We know
it was overdue, right? So,
yeah. What were the signs that you saw that were, you knew it was going to happen?
I mean, I always kind of, people always called XIX and the DRF a paper tiger, and I sort of disagreed with that, because they always hate the ability to just pay people and like get people on their side by money ways. But for some reason, so I don't want to throw around any accusations here, but for some reason they've been holding the like drone space for I don't know how many years, and we see how much money we're making with our rental space. So I can like sort of extrapolate how much money DRF has to make with their rental space. And somehow after a bunch of fighting with Tri and a little bit of skirmishing with Volta and Skill Yourself, they ended up being poor. So I wonder where all that is going. But basically, they were just broke. There was no more money to pay people, or all the people they could potentially pay were involved in other stuff. And then they just got schooled by Skill Yourself. I mean, the fact that a coalition of alliances like Skill Yourself and Volta, who were effectively capable of maybe fielding like 150, 200 characters, which was multi-boxed by like 80 people, right? 80, 90 people. That the fact that the DRF and the DCU, basically two coalitions, were just being, you know, schooled by them so hard, I was like, okay, this shit's done. Because when I noticed that Volta and Skill Yourself are just making more and more progress, actually killing Fortizars and stuff, I was like, okay, well, that shit's done. And then, you know, it makes sense for them. They've been cuddling with Test for a while. They're just going to merge into Legacy, whatever is left alive of them. I'm going to make Legacy even stronger. Tri is coming back. Archer went back to Tri, which is great. So Tri is going to be regaining a lot of strength now that they have their premier EUTZFC back. Volta and Skill Yourself are taking part of Drones, renting most of it away, obviously. Some of the space they're going to use for themselves, but most of it they're just going to rent out. And yeah, that's basically what's going to happen over there. Again, not enough players in the game to anyone really moving in there, to be honest. There's nobody available to live there that isn't already living there. So I'm assuming Skill Yourself will just make deals with the current renters. Renters usually want to stay where they are. So when their landlord gets killed or slaughtered, they usually just ask the new landlord, hey, is there any kind of deal we can make so we can continue living here? And then just pay the same rent to the new people, and that's probably what's going to happen.
God, no loyalty anymore. But it's not really...
Renters don't have no loyalty.
It's not really an issue of numbers.
They have a lot of loyalty. It's just to themselves.
Yeah, exactly. Or is it a matter of concentration? You know, there's plenty of people playing, but they're all kind of gravitating towards the same centers of power.
Yeah, people like to join the winning team, right? So obviously a lot of people are within Goon Swarm. A lot of people are in Legacy. Test is growing incredibly strong. They have been incredibly strong for a while, but Tesla's just gaining more and more strength as we speak. And, you know,
and they seem to be an alternative to joining the Imperium, right?
Well, quite frankly, yeah, sort of. The thing is, right, all the new players as well. And I don't want to be offensive to any people playing in high sec or low sec, but what are you being offered? Like when you join the game and during the time I was actually streaming daily, probably the most asked question is, hey, I'm a new player, what should I do to like get into the game? And the answer is always, hey, you need to find a group of people to play with, find a newbie-friendly corporation and alliance, and then go hang out with them. And there is just three really good, well-established, newbie-friendly groups in the game, or I guess four, which is Pandemic Horde, Karma Fleet, Brand New Bros, which is part of Test, and then you have EVE Uni, but... You know, no, I love EVE Uni, but they're kind of whatever. I guess you could play with EVE Uni for like a couple weeks.
They're not a
good
stepping stone into NoSec politics.
Yeah, exactly. If you want to be a part of the big war, the big stories that you read about on the news, then you're going to have to join one of those three I mentioned first. And look who those guys are. Those are, you know, Pandemic Horde part of the North, Legacy being Legacy, and Goons being Goons. So all the new people, instead of going and forming their own corporations and alliances, they join the already existing ones, which then again puts them in the places that those alliances live in, and, you know, not enough players. An alliance like CO2 reforming is very exciting. Sorry, go on.
Yeah, no, it's good. What happened there? Because it used to be like stepping stones. Like you didn't just apply to these big places. You would join a small alliance and then a medium alliance and then a large alliance.
Yeah, I think that's changed though, hasn't it? Like when I joined the game, I started a small three-man corporation and we merged into a little corporation that merged into UI Federation, and then I found Providence. And I feel like that kind of natural progression is lost a lot for newer players. They don't get to experience what the challenges of trying to lead something are and be like, fuck this, let me get the hell out of this, and then back into it for the next 7 years of my fucking life.
Well, you used to like nurse your kill board, right? You used to try to get out there, get kills, get your scoreboard up, and then you would show that as part of your resume to an alliance that you wanted to join. Or
do you remember SP limits, where you had to have 30 million SP to join someone's corp?
Right, SP limits, right.
Yes. Yeah. This is so old school Eve. I love it.
They still exist to some extent in some places, only not in a hard number count, but you need to be able to fly these things count.
Yeah.
I mean, that was the idea, but the fact that you could just generalize and say, well, if there are 40 million skill points, that we can assume this. If there are only 6 million, we can assume they can't do a lot of stuff we do.
And the more different things they add into the game, the more diverse your skill set might be. So you kind of have to focus on the specifics more than if you have 30 mil SP, you will have these skills. Because now if you have 30 mil SP, you could have fucking anything.
Right. You have 30 mil SP and PI.
Well, it's interesting. The concentration. Now, this is important because if CCP looks at this and says, wow, the concentration of players is in these four groups, are they going to nerf size? Are they going to nerf scale? Because that's the only thing that Imperium fears.
They tried that, but it's not going to work. They tried nerfing size when they introduced Fozzyzov because they thought it would totally break up the big coalitions because it wasn't feasible. It's bullshit, man. Like, as long as
all it did was force the coalitions into one region, and one region can support a coalition, so it's fine.
Well, in our case, it just forced us to put everyone into GSF itself.
Yeah, exactly. They just consolidate everything, and there's always people are always gonna find a way to play the way they want to play the game. That's the whole beauty of being a sandbox. If they would restrict us in the abilities on forming these big coalitions and alliances, then they wouldn't be Eve anymore. So I don't think CCP will do that. And even if they try to do it, they're probably going to fail horribly at it because that's generally what they do.
You can't restrict size so much as you can restrict the effect size has to some extent.
Generally, what CCP has tried to do in the past is increase resource tension as your size grows. So the bigger your alliance gets, the more complexity you have to deal with in order to keep your coalition being effective. And historically, that's always hit the smaller alliances a lot harder because smaller alliances have very little leadership redundancy. So all it takes is a couple of extra bits of complexity, and their leadership structures tend to get overwhelmed very, very quickly whenever anything goes wrong. And that's always been the problem with how CCP has tried to design around large alliances. That's not just Goonswarm. That's also things like Pandemic Legion when they were, kind of king of the hill. In the pre-Phobie days, in terms of capital warfare.
Pre-Phobie, we call it.
Phobie. I refuse to pronounce it correctly now because I pronounced it incorrectly once. And now I'm sure if I just pronounce it incorrectly for the whole time, everyone would just believe that's the correct way.
Well, what's interesting is if you don't curb the number concentration, then anytime you put in conflict drivers, it's going to be dominated by whatever group is interested in dominating that.
Yeah, exactly, but that's also part of the sandbox, right? Because if, well, this is going to be stupid. I don't know shit about the real life politics, but I just want to say like the strongest and biggest groups are always going to be able to dominate at whatever they put their mind to. The goal would be to put too many things in the goal would be to put so many valuable things that are worth doing into the game that they just can't possibly do all of them at once. So that, for example, if goons focus on activity A, it will leave activity B and C for other groups. And that's what you want to do, but that's just not the case in the game right now. Basically, whatever the big groups put their mind to, they can achieve that. There's nothing you can do about it.
The strong do what they can and the weak suffer what they must.
Right, Jinzu. Nice.
That's not even Sun Tzu at all. That's fucking ancient Greek. Come on, partner, you should know this.
Doesn't matter.
You're a fucking nerd, dude. Just saying.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to bleep a lot of things. Okay. Another thing we wanted to talk about. Speaking of the tables being turned from weak and strong, we have Test imposing their will on Providence, and it looks like Pandemic Legion, who is very well known for many years now to be a juggernaut, is having to back out because they are just getting swamped by the amount of people coming in from Test.
Are they actually giving up on it, or?
No, I don't think so.
No, it just shows again to prove that all of Reddit are completely stupid. Like, it's just another case of that, really. Like, the level of meme about PL getting destroyed in the dumpster, oh my god, they're evacing and running away.
That dumpster meme was amazing.
Ask anyone who's ever done any level of alliance leadership. If you have a forward staging base and a group five times your size and you don't have your super capital fleet on this side of the map, and they certainly have theirs, do you keep all your shit in that forward staging base when you can't contest a single grid effectively? No, you don't. You get all of your stuff to somewhere safe. PL are still fighting. I'm seeing pings every like 1 or 2 hours to go and do stuff. Like the fighting is still going on. We just moved so that if tests decide to blow up all our stuff, they can't. Like, it's just a lot of dumb.
That's what I've heard. The PL is still forming. They are still fighting. It's not like they've disappeared or even given up on the area.
Yeah. So, like, the thing was is that as was, I guess, leaked in the Pro God pot calling the kettle post. Mm-hmm. It was said that like when we were getting to the time change around, PL was like, okay, we've taken Provi. Nobody's really contesting it. Let's look at other deployments, because PL and B can back me up on this because he was in PL for a really long time at kind of like the highest FC level. Like, PL goes where they think they're going to get the coolest content and fights the vast majority of the time. And Provi was like, okay, we've taken the space. We've got it. The thing's going to flip. Where do we go next? Then Test, after letting Provi die, decide that they now want to put their attention there. That suddenly means there's a ton of content here. So the plan changes from where do we go to get content? Oh, content's already here. So we don't need to move anymore. So it's not so much, again, the memeing of goalposts shifting. It's like, well, PL are doing what they always do. Why is everyone surprised? In terms of like the sheer numbers argument, I'm really interested to see how many stations each side hold towards the end. We've had a bunch of like third-party groups come in and start hosting stuff. Obviously, Test are trying to take as much as they can. I'm really interested to see when the flip comes, who owns what. I'm personally expecting Test to have a very big chunk, maybe probably more than half of it at least. But I think that it's going to be really, really, really fun for everyone involved for the next... How long is it? It's like just 2 weeks or something?
Two weeks.
It's going to be awesome. It's going to be absolutely fantastic for everyone involved, in my opinion.
Yeah, I looked, and the amount of stations that are actually flipping is considerable. I didn't realize it was so many.
There's only 12 Pandemic Legion sov structures left in Providence, right? 12.
Yeah.
Out of like 100 and something?
But there's still plenty of time on the clock, to use a sports metaphor. Like, maybe they're waiting until there's 6 days to go before they decide to just go nuts. Or maybe I'm being optimistic. I don't know.
I kind of feel like Tess pulled the trigger about a week too early, but...
Yeah, there's a whole thing about momentum, right?
Yes. It's actually really important, and we'll see. So Tess has a lot of people, and I think they can, they're probably, like Apostle said, they're probably going to be able to hold a lot of the stations, but the initial hype and the initial numbers that they're going to get out of the hype are going to be gone by the time the changes actually approach, and the autism that Ragnar Bile and this group in Higher Than Everest have for Entosis-ing is something that you should not underestimate. So we will see how things play out when the changes actually hit. I agree with Apostle on that one. I think it's going to look a lot different than what people expect. It's still going to be...
They're also facing defensive Fuzzysov, which is much worse than an offensive Fuzzysov.
Yeah. I mean, Ragnar is a hell of a guy, though. Like, every time I tried to toast stuff whilst I was in Provi, it would literally just be Ragnar. Like, Ragnar would just turn up and kill me. I was like, all right, great. Sam. So every time it's Ragnar.
Man, I love the Peaky Boys. They're like my favorite addition to PL. Like, probably since I joined PL, they're so much fun.
But yeah, something that's been a very strong misconception, I think, on Reddit especially, is that these stations have been taken by Providence, and that's very, very clearly not the case. Go take a look at who the structures actually belong to. Every single station that's been retaken has been retaken by a legacy member. The only Providence contribution has primarily been an iHub and TCU takes, which admittedly they've been doing very well at. But it's clear who's going to be getting the reward from this invasion. It's going to be Legacy, not Providence.
Harvey and Ragnar, are they from Avalanche or Higher Than Everest?
Both Peak, Higher Than Everest. Avalanche is in NC Dot.
That's right. I get those mixed up. Well, they were Harvey and Ragnar were BL, and then they became the culture, and now that corporation has gone into PL.
Apparently there is a massive super brawl going down in Wicked Creek. Does anyone know
about that too? Yeah.
Yeah, that's why we couldn't get Garst here. I think it's Tri probably. I don't know who all is involved. I'll try to check it out before we finish here, but we had Garst lined up to come in and tell us a bit more about the DRF And even CPA might.
Oh yeah, there's DRF Titans on grid. I'm just looking at a Red Alliance lift that got doomstayed by a Legion of XXX Death Titan.
Yep.
In C attack LTXS.
So basically, unless test is formed up and ready to roll, they're just going to feed their ass off XX. That is. Okay, let's see.
So DRF well, yeah. is.
Well, I believe let me, they have let me the... get you guys some information here.
Okay, cool. Thanks. Live.
Look at this. Live reporting from Talking In Stations. You heard it here first, ladies and gentlemen. After we heard it from chat, of course.
Well, what we did know, as Killaby is looking things up, before we started the show, that DRF was going to have a meeting around this time. The battle actually started when this show started. So what you're seeing is the casualties are actually happening now. And we were going to have some guys from Tri show up on the show, but they had that fleet to do. So, and that's going down now. So well, we can discuss it next week, what the results are for this fight, because it looks like it's turning into a big fight. Now, DRF is probably trying to move to join test, and that's probably something or other, or they're defending something.
Yeah, I was going to say this fax, one of the faxes that died had a Stratos and a bunch of subcaps in it, so it looks like it's a move up going south.
Yeah, because what you would assume is that DRF would have a big meeting, and I would call everybody there to hear what's going on next for them. And then since you have everybody there, you do a move op, and that's usually what happens. But Tri did say they were going to put their Titans on that location, and it was not going to be easy for them to leave. So we'll watch that as it continues to develop. Jen?
I was just saying, we have over 420 viewers.
Yeah, well...
obviously, they want to know what's going on.
We'll see. The thing is, it's a podcast, so by the time it comes out tomorrow or later tonight in about 12 hours, if it's super timely, then it doesn't make any sense later on. So that's why I don't usually do live stuff. But we could do it. This is a special occasion. I think it's an important move. I think historically it's important. I think it's actually very important. The DRF collapsing into legacy is huge news. That's not small.
I mean, think about what that does in terms of both leaving a massive vacuum in the East and also in terms of bolstering legacy.
Exactly. And legacy is the wild card on the board right now, because you have legacy with fair relations with Imperium. And those two together they pretty much dwarf anything else as far as numbers go. So then you have to look at PL and NC and that power sector. And with GOTG kind of being hurt and spread out at the moment, like, you wonder how much staying power that lifestyle has and those alliances along with it.
It's also worth noting that of all of the major powers right now, you look at, like, say, Legacy, the United North, and the Imperium, Legacy is almost assuredly the more casual of all those powers on average. I think if you took the average, you know, test member or brave member, and you compared them against the average goon or, you know, NCPL member, there'd be a very clear difference in mentality towards the game. It's going to be interesting to see if that shifts with XIX kind of joining in and bringing their own culture to that. It's weird to be speculating about the future of your own coalition in the third person, by the way, but I'm not actually a leadership member in Legacy. It's pretty sweet.
Is it nice to have no responsibility again?
It is pretty great. I'm going to start FCE again soon, but
we'll see if we can't get eyes on
that political leader.
We'll see if we can't get eyes on that battle, and if it is, we can go a little bit long just focusing on that. But right now, do we want to stick with this for a second, or do we want to move on to AT? Because let's do that while we collect some facts. We're going to move on to Alliance Tournament. What happened there, Apothny? Something happened?
Well, we got the rules. So basically every year the Alliance Tournament season officially starts when the rules come out, because all practicing and testing you do before then is subject to being rendered completely worthless by rules changes. So everybody was practicing before now with, say, I don't know, you're allowed two hulls instead of one in your comp. For example, before you would be allowed two Sleipners, now you're allowed only one. While the testing is good in that it gets people piloting and what have you, the theory crafting aspect of it is just entirely null and void. So the real practice season, the real time when everybody's putting in effort, the time where it's really like hardcore is from when the rules are released on. And we got the rules this week and they're really cool. They're absolutely wild. They're shaking everything up in what's going to be a really cool way. Like, I'm always mega pumped coming into the Alliance tournament, but I am maximum bouncing off the walls excited. I have one exam on Tuesday, and then after that, all I plan to do until September is Alliance tournament things.
Yeah, amazing. I mean, I'm going to be taking part in the event e-broadcast, as you know. I'm really looking forward to it. There's actually going to be a podcast later where we fully chunk down all these rules with some more of the casters, but yeah, you've highlighted the main stuff there, where we're getting into a place of real, real deep theory crafting, one of the most intense theory crafting exercises in EVE Online, outside of like some of the stuff they did for the Amar Championship, where they gave people like 24 hours to theory craft up 7 comps or something.
I feel so sorry for the people in the feeders rounds, because they've got like, two and a half weeks?
Yeah, like, when are the feeder rounds actually, and where can you see those?
I think it's it's 3 weeks from now. So the weekend, 3 weeks from now, 9th and 10th of June, if I'm not mistaken. And those will be the people who are fighting for 32 of the spots in the main tournament. It was amazing last year, and it's really good for the tournament scene for more ways than Mattrel will give me time to talk about. So check out the feeders on the 9th and the 10th. That will be on the EVENT channel, because EVENT are producing the whole damn thing this year. Feeders, main tournament, everything. I think I'm hosting that. I'll be involved somehow on the show, and we'll just be getting through as many matches as we possibly can.
Yeah,
that's great.
I'm sure there'll be a ton of coverage over it as it actually goes on, but it's just nice to know that, if you're in a big alliance and you want to try doing the Alliance tournament, consider pokering your exit.
Yeah, the other key rule changes, to very quickly go over what's important, is that the fitting for flagships has been widely expanded. The types of mods you're allowed to meta is much more greatly expanded. You can also flagship Marauders now, which is really, really, really cool. There have been points changes as usual. Kind of the highlights of that is that Battlecruisers have gone up by 2 points. The sponsor this year is the Society of Conscious Thought, which means that you get cheap Praxis, Gnosis, and Synesis. You can actually get a 1-point Synesis, so a 1-point Destroyer. I personally don't think that's good, but a 1-point ship of any kind that is usually a noob ship is really valuable. If you have 99 points and 9 pilots for an amazing comp, just slapping a Synesis on there is great. The other big changes is that our mutated mods will be allowed just on flagships. Flagships count as uniques for the purpose of the tournament. So that's basically a huge Balgorn nerf, because the Bal is really good, but the Bal was like brokenly good when backed by a Rabisu. So now you can't fly Bal and Rabisu because that counts as 2 uniques, it being an Alliance tournament prize ship and the flagship. And as I said, the flagships are going to count as uniques. Jintan, am I forgetting anything? Because I know that Mattrel doesn't like me talking about the Alliance tournament.
No. Please do. Please.
I can't really think of anything huge that you've missed out, but there's a lot of nuance in how this affects the way people are going to think about the AT, because you can't quite use these same 2 ship cores that you had before.
Yeah,
you can't quite you can't run, you know, 2 Sleipnirs, as you said. So Minmatar Rush gets a lot worse because Sleipnirs are what makes that comp work. But then you have
ADCUs are massive as well. That's why Assault Frigates went up a point. Like ADCUs are going to be insane. I predict a lot of Assault Frigates and Hacks in lots of different comps. I love this Alliance tournament for many reasons. So as we've been talking about, the theory crafting, which is like my personal favorite part in terms of active involvement, is very fresh and new, and there's a whole host of new challenges to solve. So whenever CCP introduces content in general on Tranquility, it's like a new set of puzzles to solve. So like Abyssal Dead Space, all the people who love doing that kind of content, they have a whole new set of encounters to test and solve and figure out optimal fittings, optimal ways to run it, all that kind of thing. And going down to one hull type and all these other rule changes adds a huge new theory crafting challenge to overcome. And it's going to massively reward the teams who have the combination of experience and put in the effort to actually solve them. So it's really fantastic for kind of the more experienced end of the Alliance tournament teams as well. But then also, this Alliance tournament is fantastic for younger teams, because not only are more hulls going to be needed to be used, so you're more likely to be skilled into those hulls, the feeder rounds and the earlier rounds of the Alliance tournament give so many more people in the game an opportunity to get hands-on experience at going into the Alliance tournament. This was true last year in the feeders. It's going to be true this year in the feeders, where an Alliance who hasn't taken part in the tournament before can take part, get a couple games, and build up that experience, see whether their members like it. And it might be the case that some of those members are inspired and say, hey, we really love this, we want to become an Alliance Tournament Alliance. Because before getting into the top 64 teams, you have to put in money for the draw, basically, or get lucky. But now everybody who wants to be involved, who even think they might be interested in the Alliance Tournament, can get involved. And the feeders, I'd say, is the most important part of kind of expanding the love of the tournament to the wider EVE community and making it more relevant to the wider EVE community.
Equally, if you want an example of like what a first or even set, I don't think it was their first time, but it was certainly one of their, you know, they never made a showing like this before. Laserhawks coming out of nowhere and taking third last Alliance tournament, for example.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure they've done one or two before, but like,
yeah, I'm sure
they did amazing though.
But they spiked out of nowhere. They went from like, oh, you know, maybe they'll hit top eight. That would be very nice for them to, oh, they're just casually in the losers' final. Sweet.
Yeah, I mean, last year was the proof that God is dead in terms of the Alliance tournament. Like the old until 80-12 history of it's PL versus Hydra and everyone else doesn't really matter. That's just dead and has been for years. Like, that like you can be involved and you can do really well. I'm saying as a new team, winning a game, winning two games should be like your goal and your hope, in the same way that if you are a brand new football team, you shouldn't be expecting to beat Manchester United in the finals of British football. That's my extent of knowledge of British football, I'm sorry. But honestly, the most fun for me happens before day one. And I'm including the fun I have hosting and commentating, which I love. Just like working on a group project with 20 dudes that are all really passionate, you work with them almost every night, solving problems, working together, flying together. That is, in my mind, what almost everyone loves about EVE in some way or another, whether you're a PvP guy that loves working with your FSC team, whether you're an industry guy that loves working with your logistics people. Like, a lot of the core love of EVE is doing group project work, as a way to put it. And the Alliance tournament is a fantastic opportunity to engage in the fun of that.
So by the looks of it, Triumvirate have really dropped the hammer here. So it looks like two super fleets might be facing off against each other at SeaTac-El.
Even Lumpy dropped all their shit in. So that means,
okay.
I think we should probably pretty sure XX just getting dogpiled though. I don't think X. So the problem is that XX doesn't really have any experience this season when it comes to super cap stuff. So I feel like this is going to be a very one-sided fight. If the servers hold up, obviously there's always the possibility of the servers just not, you know.
So there's a question in the chat. When's EVE-NT Nottingham this year? I can answer that. So we have the feeders being casted by EVE-NT, which will not be a studio broadcast. That will just be online. Everyone's at home. That's 3 weeks from today. That's June 9th and 10th. The Alliance tournament itself is the last weekend of July, and then the first three weekends of August. The third weekend of August, which is the finals day, that's only going to be the Saturday. We've moved around the scheduling, so all the games are on that Saturday of the third weekend of August. I want to say it's August 18th. But whichever, I'm checking on my thing. Yeah, August 18th. And that will be the EVE big meetup in Nottingham at the usual place, Antenna. And there will be a big finals party. There may or may not be special guests involved, but that's going to be a huge party that will actually be doing the broadcast like two rooms over. So the people casting and hosting and doing the camera work will be dropping in and out to hang out and say hi. Everybody will be there to chat about the Alliance tournament. We tried it last year, which was really good fun. It was kind of late notice and it wasn't advertised very well for people to show up for the last two weekends. So we got a couple people down, but it wasn't like a huge event. And then, the year before that, I ran an AT finals watching meet in Birmingham, which is just over from Nottingham. And we got like 20 to 30 dudes there, which is really, really fun. So we're kind of, this has been building up probably like for like the last 2 years in terms of having a big official finals party. So definitely, if you can be in Nottingham, England on the 18th of August, it's going to be amazing.
I'll even let you put on my suit as long as you're not so big you tear.
Basically, be a fully grown man and you're not going to fit. Like, if you've got children with you, then Molly might fit into it. Hey, it used to be me. Now you get it, son.
Wait, are you both going to be commentary this year?
Yep.
You bet. They can't separate us. Joined at the hip.
I mean, I've been casting and hosting the damn thing for 4 years now, so, like, you can't avoid me at this point, Matterall. I'm sorry.
No, actually, you're kind of winning me over, I gotta say. Especially like how you explain that it's a different part of the game about problem solving. That's compelling.
Dude, you should hook up with the NC team. Like, the NC.NC.NC.NC.NC.NC.NC.NC.NC.NC.NC.NC.NC.NC.NC.NC.NC.NC.NC.NC.NC.NC.NC.NC.NC.NC.NC.NC.NC.NC.NC.NC.NC.NC.NC.NC.NC.NC.NC.NC.NC.NC.NC.NC.NC.NC.NC.NC.NC.NC.NC.NC.NC.NC.NC.NC.NC.NC.NC.NC.NC.NC.NC.NC.NC.NC.NC.NC.NC.NC.NC.NC.NC.NC.NC.NC.NC.NC.NC.NC.NC.NC.NC.NC.NC.NC.NC.NC.NC.NC.NC.NC.NC.NC.NC.NC.NC.NC.NC.NC.NC.NC.NC.NC.NC.NC.NC.NC.NC.NC.NC.NC.NC.NC.NC.NC.NC.NC.NC.NC.NC.NC.NC.NC.NC.NC.NC.NC. to kind of like back up all of that, like you should totally have a go at getting involved.
Yeah, that's Nidspur, one of the FCs for NC that actually Killaby knows very, very well. And they're already training, if I'm not mistaken. I don't have any time to commit to linear things, so I can't be counted on. And that really puts me out of a lot of things in EVE.
Well, that's one of the great things about AT practice is that people always need people to show up for practice. So if you make one practice a week, you are useful in that one practice, either by helping clear up the arena, flying a ship to make sure you can do in-houses or whatever. Like, so teams that expect to do well have to practice really, really, really hard. But there are varied scales of involvement. You have the people who run the team, who basically it is their job for a couple months. You have regular pilots and theory crafters, so people in kind of like my category. I make as many practices as I possibly can. That's kind of like what I put my hobby time into. And then you have people who love the tourney but have busy lives or whatever, and they'll turn up to one practice a week, one practice a fortnight, but there will still be a use for them, whether it's, like I said, clearing up the arena, just making sure you have 20 people in ships to do in-house scrimmages. And the more people you have, the more practices you run, the more data you can get. Everyone who is willing to be involved is immensely valuable to any team.
That is really interesting. I never thought about that as helping at least be a scrimmager.
Yeah, like I have never expected to fly on the PL team. I found out in AT4 team that they were actually going to ask me if my role came up, which it didn't. But like, honestly, the most fun I have, like I said, it is the practice season. And again, I get to host and commentate it, which is like dream job. But even more fun than that is practice sessions if you're with a team that isn't massively toxic.
You mean like
putting... Thankfully, I am. The PL team is awesome.
Oh, you mean toxic to each other, not necessarily to the tournament.
Yeah, because like obviously, like, you know, if you spend an evening with the same 10 people for 3 months, it can turn into like, I think Elise once explained it as, you know, when you meet your family for Thanksgiving and all the old arguments break out, but that Thanksgiving dinner happens every night for 3 months. That's what happens on like a not so fun team. But if you're on a team with people that you get on with and things are going well, like it's just the best. It's the best thing in EVE for me personally.
All right. Well, it looks like we're going to come back to AT, but everybody seems to be rage forming for this fight. So it's turning.
You're roboting, buddy.
DR.
He's getting DDoSed. New plan DDoS the wrong person.
Oh, are they fighting the Russians? No way. Yeah.
Basically, everybody's piling into the fight right now by the looks of it. So as of right now, it looks like Red Alliance is taking most of the losses, with their carrier fleet being shit on by the XIX cap fleet. But I'm assuming that with Tests getting in, actually Tests is on the side of XIX probably, but Tri has already dropped all their stuff. Lumpy has even dropped all their stuff, I think, and Fraternity and the Winter Coalition also have dropped everything they have. So I'm pretty sure that you know, once Red Alliance has lost most of the stuff, XX is going to start to bleed a lot of stuff. That's assuming the servers hold up.
Looks like every super in the south and east are currently burning to that system.
Yeah. Okay. This could be big then.
The problem is with the server, right? Because obviously all the shit. That's the problem with the whole like reinforced node system of EVE. You don't ask for the node to be reinforced for this kind of thing because it usually happens spontaneously.
And we're looking at the kill board too, so we'll keep our eyes on it.
So far, it's mostly carriers by Red Alliance.
Those are very expensive carriers, by the way. They're coming up to like tens of billions.
They're full of ships. Some move carriers.
Yeah.
Friend.
We thought they were Nyx.
Oh, wait, no. Yeah, Red Alliance is moving. Never mind. But no, look at the... No, the Red Alliance carriers are cheap. Those are just regular 2-bill carriers. But then if you look at the XIX one, it's like 12 bill. This XIX right. carrier I'm looking at is 12 billion. The other XIX, well, it, you know, it's like 5 bill, 4 bill. So yeah, the XIX ones are full of ships that they are using their stuff to move for.
So this is an ambush of a move-up, like an full subcap move-up, not just like a cap move-up.
No.
That explains so much.
No, all these apostles are full of Orthruses and Ishtars and stuff.
It is a cap move-up, but it is them having...
They're just bringing all their shit with them because they know they're not going to get that space. Fuck, exactly. This is rough.
That's going to hurt.
This is from people getting like straight wiped out of the game. Like, this isn't just, let's casually kill some super caps. This is, let's kill everything you own. Jesus.
Someone's made a really bad mistake.
Their local's already at 1500, and Leg's pretty bad. A couple guys are telling me that they've already DC'd 3 or 4 times, so.
We'll just continue coverage here if we can and talk about it a little bit. Now, a couple things come to mind. One is a lot of these guys recently moved down to Innsmouth with all their stuff anyway. So maybe they left their stuff inside their carriers and are now trying to move to a final destination. Because this is a continued recession of the DRF group, especially Red Alliance, or no, XX Death, especially XX Death.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about this earlier, right? Basically, XIX decided to fold into Legacy, and XIX living in Innsmouth before to get to Legacy space. I don't know which. I'm not aware of the details of that agreement they made with Legacy, but obviously they're going to be given some space closer to the actual Legacy space. And Wicked Creek is usually the way people move, and they've just been dropped on.
Now,
someone in chat goes with Robbie Glorn. He's asking for a 101 of roughly who's involved and kind of what their relationship is. And that might be a good thing to kind of end the podcast on, because then we can do a whole, you know, earlier on the show thing next week when we actually have the facts of how this plays out.
Let's real quick, while we're gathering more information, finish up Alliance Tournament. Is there anything else to say on that, Apothny?
Watch out, get involved. I, as usual, will do a ton of media. I'm bringing back my team summaries this year. I couldn't do them last year. So I'm going to be hopefully gathering more than just me to work on basically a summary of when the teams involved were announced. I'll be like who they are, when they formed, what their Alliance tournament history is, what they do on TQ, because I think one of the most important things for people who aren't already super technical analysis tournament nerds to kind of enjoy the tourney is so that you're not just watching for your team on that one match on a weekend. It's whenever you see teams, you go, okay, it's this team versus this team. This is interesting because this story is good because. And I think that doing stuff like that is super important. So I will be doing as much coverage as I possibly can on Crossing Zebras. I've been releasing a ton of AT articles already, kind of like more historically about the tournament. I've got one coming out hopefully next weekend that's a quick like 80 ship update on what ones you're likely to see, how the 80 ship meta has developed over the last 2 years since I read about them. So Crossing Zebras for my coverage, and I'm sure that tons of other people will be doing coverage as well. And then also in an hour and a half on the CCP stream, there will be a bunch of us going through the rules in detail and kind of really theory crafting the crap out of what we expect to see this year. As much as we can, obviously without revealing secrets that we plan to use, and also kind of chatting about how awesome the tournament's going to be this year. Spoiler, it's going to be fucking amazing.
Awesome. Your excitement is contagious. Okay, thanks for that report on the Alliance tournament. There will definitely be more material on that in the coming weeks, all over the place and also on TIS. We're going to be talking about a couple things in between updates that we give you about this big fight that's going on with Drone Region Federation getting pummeled by, looks like, Triumvirate and pretty much everybody else. Lumpy and the Winter Coalition is involved in this one, although it's not their time zone. So we'll keep an eye on that. Looks like a move op that's gone bad as they are trying to get to Legacy, their new home, Legacy Coalition, that is.
It's Red Alliance specifically, and Red Alliance is not part of the DRF, just as a heads up, Mataram. they were part of the Imperium, but they've... I'm not sure entirely. Well,
it's not
sure
the Red Alliance move up that has been dropped on. Because the expensive carriers are the XIX ones. The ones full of ships are owned by XIX. It was an XIX move up by the looks of it. And I think Red Alliance were just the first to drop them, which is why they're losing all the carriers, because all the response that XIX dropped initially obviously focused on their initial aggressors, right? So XIX, Red Alliance is just losing a lot of Chimeras right now because that's their carrier doctrine, and that's just what they dropped on XIX with.
So they're trying to keep XIX in position whilst everyone comes.
Yeah, while everybody else dogpiles in.
Right, okay.
Okay, so there's a rivalry there, isn't there, between, I mean, XX Death and Red Alliance aren't in, they're not the same Russian.
It's Russians, bro.
All Russian alliances hate each other apart from the ones that work together. Like, there's, ever since the Russian Civil War, they've never liked each other.
Yeah. So Red Alliance and Triumvirate working together to pummel a move up from DRF, which was basically the lead alliance in DRF is XX Death. I don't think we've explained that very well, but DRF is a coalition, Drone Region Federation, and they have recently retreated from the Drone Regions. The major alliance in that group is XX Death. Those are the guys that are moving. Those are the guys getting killed by Red Alliance, Triumvirate, Winter Coalition, and Lumpy's in there too. What's Lumpy a part
just,
of these days?
We've just had the first Fraternity Titan down.
Oh,
Fraternity.
First time ever they had a Titan.
Winter Coalition just entered the field and they have immediately lost a Titan.
Oh. Well, don't make it sound that bad, is.
So yeah, this might be this could be a bit of a messy one for you to pull apart after all, because it sounds like a lot of people are going to get, well, Test is on route.
Test is en route, and that's important because Test is on the side of the people who are getting, let's say, pummeled, the move up, and that would be XX Death. Why weren't they there before? They're busy in Providence?
Who?
Test. Test is bringing
XX... They're staging in Provi right now, so it's probably hard to get caps there. In fucking... Wicked Creek. How far
if
away?
If XIX was dropped on a move up, Test wasn't there already because they didn't plan on that happening. You never plan on your move up during getting dropped on.
Yeah.
Looks like it's 3 or 4 mids from Providence for supers.
Yeah. Killaby, why don't move ups get hit usually?
No, I said you don't plan. Like, if I'm planning a move up, I'm not telling, hey, Test, can you please be ready to help us out? Because we're probably going to get dropped on our move up, because usually you don't plan your move up to get dropped on. Usually you plan your move up to be safe, right?
Basically, what he's saying, Mataro, is that when you're doing a move up, you're making sure that, or you should, if you're a competent FC, you're making sure that every single step in your plan introduces the minimum amount of possible risk. You're jumping at that Fortis R on zero. You're making people dot their capitals up. You're waiting. You're waiting for all of the fatigue to be gone. Then you're all jumping again at once. You've got a lot of capitals there, so a few subcaps can't really deal with you. You're making sure every Fortis R has a PDS on it so you can smart bomb off bubbles. Like, you're taking all these precautions like weeks in advance so that when you do it, it can be 2 hours and it can be fucking done.
And if you have any news about anybody having any level of capital amount at all within range of your route, you replan, you change, you delay, you just don't do it.
Yeah.
Well, that's what I mean. And part of that is secrecy. So Triumvirate announced that they knew this move up was happening. They said it yesterday on the meta show. So, okay, we have a picture coming in. We'll bring that up to you of what's going on. It's quite amazing. Instead of teasing, I'll actually get it on screen. But so if the public knew there was going to be this move up, I figure at that point you would have your bat phone ready.
This is actually really funny. We just had one SIG ping to go shoot XIX supers and another SIG ping to go shoot tri supers. Everyone's trying to figure out who's on whose side.
I think you guys are just going to shoot both people's supers, to be honest. I mean, they're both kill mouse.
Let's look at the politics here. I mean, you basically have XIX trying to make a move. You have Test. It will definitely be on their side since they're going to be allies in the near future. So what's Imperium's view on this?
Everyone's trying to figure that out at the moment, actually.
Because you don't necessarily want to upset a possible ally in the future.
I mean, we kind of have soft ties with Red. I don't, we don't work with them at all, but I mean, they live in PB, right? But at the same time, we kind of have soft ties with Test. So I don't know. Well, this is what happens when you have blue trolls, I guess.
All right. Well, it's a hell of a big fight. How did they, here's the thing. How did they get caught moving? Cause you're right, Jintan, when you do a move up, you try to maximize safety by ensuring. Okay, so let's find out how they screwed up, because they made themselves vulnerable, and you're not really supposed to be vulnerable during move ops. But then again, these are super capitals, and you can no longer tether with safety. It becomes a different thing now, unless you have keep stars along the path.
And this is an FRT system.
Fraternity?
Yeah, this is one that the fight's in.
What's the actual system? Is it in Ains Mother?
CTAC LT. Wicked Creek.
It's worth noting this is a little different to the LoSec move up, where MC lost like a couple of Titans and stuff, because this is NullSec. Like, there's a good chance all of those Titans stay there and die.
You know, it really depends on how the sides form then, doesn't it? Because if everything's bubbled.
Well, you've got two super fleets committed now. You can't back down.
Yeah.
One super fleet has to die. That's just how this works. Either you extract your super fleet or you kill the enemies. That's it. Yeah. That's the only two objectives now in this fight.
When you start seeing bombers bombing their own Titans, that's when you know things are desperate, because that means they're desperately trying to extract.
Yeah. Sounds like Tests have dreads on field too.
Yeah, yeah. I should probably log in at some point, shouldn't I? I can't. I gotta eat.
You can eat on camera.
I can't eat and get in fleet and be on camera at the same time. That's too many things.
Get your priorities straight.
I gotta buy food. You got a podcast in another hour. Every podcast. It's impossible, Matterall.
It's AT season. We're in demand.
Don't you know you have to suffer for Eve? It's not Eve if you're not suffering.
I mean, he's in tests, so there's plenty of suffering there. Hey!
Oh, nice. I don't even have a good comeback for that one, Apoth. I need to play some more.
Let's talk about that, though. I think that was very interesting. You have two, for people that aren't sure, you have two major fleets that are engaged, and one has to die.
Yeah.
Not really.
One doesn't have to die, but one's going to lose the majority of their numbers here. You know, just even if you go by the example of the
extracting is really easy nowadays. Like, with everything you have available to you, with capital prop mods, with being able to boost bubbles, to bomb bubbles, getting out of a super cap fight if you know what to do is actually pretty easy. But that's always the main issue. Most people don't really know what to do in a situation like that, especially. XIX, like I said, they don't have a lot of very experienced FCs when it comes to that, and I'm not sure who's running everything that's happening right now on XIX at all. But yeah, I could see them. I could see that being a problem for them. We'll see how it turns out, though. So far, XIX is doing pretty good. I mean, XIX just killed a fraternity boss, and we'll see how it goes.
How many Titans do you think are going to die here, Killer? How many super capitals? Let's make it more generic. How many super capitals do you think we're going to die? Give me a rough estimate.
I'm not going to answer that. This is impossible to say for me.
I'm going to put down a bold 25. Who wants to go over and under on that?
I'm taking under, because then one of two things happens. One, it's under and I'm right, or two, it's over and it's fucking awesome. So either way, I win.
I think it's under 25.
What's the next biggest super fight after BTECR?
That would probably be Asakai?
No.
Asakai happened before BTECR.
Yep, sorry, I thought you meant compared to.
Asakai was only like three Titans.
Yeah, it was only three Titans, mostly supers.
Oh, SH1 probably. SH1 was pretty big, although not much died there because, you know, like I said, it's pretty easy to extract. Other than that, I don't know if you want to count 9TEC4 as a super fight. But
didn't CO2.
I guess 9TEC4.
CO2 lost like six Titans, but they were managed to extract.
They lost less in SH1, which was a fight they committed like a whole lot in. Then they lost to our Dread Bomb in their home space.
That was the fight that showed me that extracting Titans was a whole new deal with the Bouchers. That was an incredible escape with 10 Titans or 12 Titans committed, and they were able to get 8 of them out.
It wasn't more than it. It was 20. It was 32 titans or something that they dropped in initially.
Super carrier bombs. All
right, here's a question then, Killer. Do you think that's a good thing or a bad thing? Do you think the fact that it's easier to commit now because you can get away is good or bad for the game?
Well, I guess it could be good, but people still don't commit because they're... Here's the thing. If you're fighting someone that actually knows what they're like, that are prepared for any kind of fight like that, in terms of they know what to do in a scenario like that, then you're not going to get out that easy, because you can clear a lot of bubbles there. You can get a lot of people out by just starbursting your supers and titans, but you're still going to take massive losses, and you're going to get part of the people out. The problem message one was that us as NC and PL, we already had everybody in our supers and titans and in our subcaps, and then also having people log in their fourth, fifth account to bring in Addictor as well just didn't really work out that well. And then goons were actually on their way. I talked to Jay. I think I was talking to Jay when SH1 happened. I was like, bro, just bring as many Addictors as you can from Jita. And there were like a couple jumps out, but then it was already over by the time they arrived.
Yeah, so it's Red Alliance, Dream Fleet, and Tri versus DRF. This is a Russian brawl, isn't it?
Wonder if we'll see any AoE DD stuff.
I hope we see some lances. Lances are amazing.
Yeah.
Not actually like good, they just look really pretty.
No, lances are pretty good. You can wipe battleship fleets with them. You just gotta aim them right.
It's pretty hard to use them in tie-dye.
Yeah, tie-dye, generally everything is kind of sucks in tie-dye, but it's just tie-dye. But lances are pretty strong. Bosons are, in theory, very strong too, but it's like what I learned in 9-Tech-4 when I tried the Suicide Titans. It was something that is actually, especially in tie-dye, it's incredibly hard to pull off because everything is so warped. Like the fucking emergency hull energizer that usually lasts 20 seconds. You have to account for that in tie-dye, and then you don't know when to hit the last boson, and then it all kind of messed up, and nothing ended up dying.
Boson's really hard on an insino at the best times anyway.
I have reports of doomsdays going off.
All right. Well, sorry, never mind.
Well, we'll see. This looks like a Russian fight, and a lot of people are coming to third party. There are alliances at stake.
They're not third partying. None of the people going there, except maybe goons, are third partying.
Like, or they haven't decided.
Everybody has assigned sites they're working with. And it's mostly going to be people ganging up on XIX. I'm not sure on Test, because Creature said in Discord that they were not with XIX, but Test is with XIX usually. So I would assume that Test is siding with XIX. Also makes sense if you look at the Test Dread Lost mails. It's mostly Lumpy, Tri, Winter, and Red under the Test Dread mail. So it's pretty straightforward, actually. It's Test and XIX and all their friends versus Tri, Red Alliance, Lumpy, and everybody else piling onto XIX, basically, and Winter. And then now goons are coming in and just third-partying. That's it, pretty much. Pretty straightforward. The Russians sparked it, but pretty sure that the other people are going to dominate it, especially Tri is probably going to dominate it. But they're super fleet.
Depends how fast Tess gets there.
Yeah, I don't think Tess is moving supers, so...
Oh, they're not?
Oh, doesn't look like it.
I guess they can just trade some dreads away then.
Yeah, probably just dread bombed. Because all their supers are in ERVK as well, right? So even if they're moving super, it's going to take them some time.
That's a lot of hardware on the field.
Looks like there's more dreads landing right now.
Yeah.
More try.
Might be one of the most expensive grids in a long time.
One of the most expensive what?
Grids, like amount of ISK committed to a field. You could probably, I mean, 9-Tech-4 was obviously bigger in terms of overall ISK committed, but...
What do we have on... One second. What do we have on local? Anybody got a local count?
No, not currently. But I imagine it's going to probably hit the 3,000 to 4,000 range. That's where these kinds of fights tend to hit.
It's nowhere near that yet. I think it's at like 1,600 right now, some shit.
It'll easily break 2k just because people will just be like, ah, oh, let me fly an interceptor there and whore on Titans.
There's another really sizable jet bomb coming in right now. I don't want to call on who's going to... I'm pretty sure XX is going to lose this fight, but I might be completely wrong here. We'll see. That's very interesting for sure. It's my personal experience.
Test Supers might be on the move.
That could very well be. I mean, this fight's not going to... like, unless the service crashed, this fight's not going to be over for quite some time. And Test can definitely get in range with their Supers, so they might as well, right? They might as well. We'll see. I mean, it would be... I wonder if Test... I guess as long as XIX is still alive and they have reasonable amount of shit on field, Test would be willing to commit to the grid as well. Because just Test on their own jumping in there would be a little bit ridiculous at this point because everybody's already on grid, like Tri and Co. and all their allies. But as long as XIX still has some sizable forces alive, I think it's something they could do. It'd be interesting to see how that turns out.
I think there's only one Titan down so far. So it's pretty early, especially with that tie-dye. I mean,
the fight hasn't even keep in mind that we've been talking for this for like 30 minutes now, but in game time, that fight has been going on for like 2 minutes. So
that's amazing because of tie-dye slowdown.
Yeah.
This fight looks like it's going to go on for at least a few more hours, at least.
Yeah.
Which means there's plenty of time to cover it on the next episode, most likely.
Oh, that's right, because we got to give up the clock.
Yeah. Anyway, like I said, I'm going to have to shoot off here, Matterall. It's been absolutely great fun. Thank you for having me once again.
Okay, we'll wrap up the show real quick. Yeah, as you can see, the fight that is kicking off has interrupted the end of the show, so we went to that. It's going to grow, this fight, and maybe one of the biggest fights that you've seen in a very long time. Well, actually, not a very long time, because 9Tech4 wasn't that long ago, and BTECR really, relatively speaking, wasn't that long ago either. But this may be one of those big fights. We shall see. Thanks for joining us. We will be back to report on this fight next week, because it is clearly going to be a really big show. I want to thank you guys for joining me. Jintan, Pothni, Killaby, Kunmi, thank you guys for showing up.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you for having me.
All right, we will see you next time on Talking In Stations.